John chapter 7, and we're reading the first 24 verses of John 7. It's worth remembering as we come to this passage that the last time Jesus had been in Jerusalem, he had healed a paralyzed man at the pool of Bethesda in chapter 5 on the Sabbath, and because of that, the Jewish leaders began to persecute him. But it starts still with Jesus in Galilee, where he had fed the 5,000. Now we come to chapter 7 of John, in verse 1. After this, Jesus went around in Galilee. He did not want to go about in Judea, because the Jewish leaders there were looking for a way to kill him. But when the Jewish festival of tabernacles was near, Jesus' brothers said to him, "Leave Galilee and go to Judea, so that your disciples there may see the works you do. No one who wants to become a public figure acts in secret. Since you are doing these things, show yourself to the world." For even his own brothers did not believe in him. Therefore Jesus told them, "My time is not yet here. For you, any time will do. The world cannot hate you, but it hates me because I testify that its works are evil. You go to the festival. I'm not going up to this festival because my time has not yet fully come." After he had said this, he stayed in Galilee. However, after his brothers had left for the festival, he went also, not publicly, but in secret. Now at the festival, the Jewish leaders were watching for Jesus and asking, "Where is he?" Among the crowds, there was widespread whispering about him. Some said, "He is a good man." Others replied, "No, he deceives the people." But no one would say anything publicly about him for fear of the leaders. Not until halfway through the festival did Jesus go up to the temple courts and begin to teach. The Jews there were amazed and asked, "How did this man get such learning without having been taught?" Jesus answered, "My teaching is not my own. It comes from the one who sent me. Anyone who chooses to do the will of God will find out whether my teaching comes from God or whether I speak on my own. Whoever speaks on their own does so to gain personal glory. But he who seeks the glory of the one who sent him is a man of truth. There is nothing false about him. Has not Moses given you the law? Yet not one of you keeps the law. Why are you trying to kill me?" "You are demon-possessed," the crowd answered. "Who is trying to kill you?" Jesus said to them, "I did one miracle, and you are all amazed. Yet because Moses gave you circumcision, though actually it did not come from Moses, but from the patriarchs, you circumcise a boy on the Sabbath. Now if a boy can be circumcised on the Sabbath, so that the law of Moses may not be broken, why are you angry with me for healing a man's whole body on the Sabbath? Stop judging by mere appearances, but instead judge correctly." Here in John's account of Jesus' life, we find huge controversy about Jesus. People had different opinions about him. Some wanted to kill him. Others said he was a good man. Some said he was deceiving the people. Others were angry with him and envious. Some followed him, at least for a time. Others rejected him and even accuse him here of being demon-possessed. The one thing people at the time could not do was ignore him. If you met Jesus or heard him teaching or saw his miraculous powers, it left a huge impression on you. And Jesus was the topic of many a discussion at that time. And a quick read of John chapters 7 and 8 shows that this constant questioning that people have, who really is Jesus? And John, of course, it is recording these things in order to get his readers, people like us here this morning, he's writing these things to get us to think about Jesus. John wants you to come and see that Jesus is the Son of God from heaven. John wants you to come to the point where you are willing to trust in Jesus Christ. He wants you to come to the point where you will commit your whole life to him and do so every day. And so in John's Gospel, you are confronted with Jesus Christ. And like the people of that time, you cannot easily ignore him. His miracles, his resurrection, his claims to be from the Father, the description of him as the eternal Word who became flesh. You're confronted with his offer of forgiveness and the fullness of life, eternal life that he offers. And these are not insignificant things. These are the most important things that anyone could think about. He challenges us. He challenges everything in our lives, our way of thinking, our beliefs in God, our words, our actions, everything. And one way in which John brings this challenge to us is by telling us about people at the time and how they responded to Jesus. And so here in John 7, we read of Jesus' brothers. And we read of the Jews in Jerusalem. And we find that both groups do not believe in Jesus. They are filled with unbelief. And as we read about these people, we're kind of made to think, well, am I like that? Do I have that kind of unbelief in my heart? Or more positively, how can I avoid the unbelief that Jesus' brothers and the people in Jerusalem showed? How can I come to see Jesus for myself? How can I respond in a true way? Well, there are three things in this passage that you need to know. If you want to avoid the unbelief that these people here showed, there are three things that you need to know. And the first is this: only the Father can enable you to believe in Jesus. Only the Father can enable you to believe in Jesus. This is what Jesus had been teaching in John chapter 6. Just look back at John 6 and verse 65. Jesus went on to say, "This is why I told you that no one can come to me unless the Father has enabled them." And here in chapter 7 we see a telling example of this very thing in Jesus' brothers. Of all the people you would expect to see who Jesus really was, surely it would be his brothers. They'd grown up with him. He was their oldest brother. Every day they saw his life, and it was a wonderful life. Luke tells us how Jesus was obedient to his parents and how he grew in favor with God and man. There was something very attractive about the life of Jesus. Jesus treated his brothers fairly and kindly. He never did things to his own advantage as he was growing up with them. When his brothers were difficult, he responded well every time. Now there's a challenge for those of you who are still growing up. You see, his brothers knew that Jesus was good and true. And now they see Jesus teaching large crowds of people and doing great miracles, claiming that God was his Father. And we read in verse 1, after this, Jesus went around in Galilee. In fact, when you compare it to the other three gospel accounts, Jesus went around Galilee for about a year, doing more miracles, speaking powerful words. And the brothers believe the miracles. They want Jesus to do the miracles in Jerusalem as well. And yet, even though they accept the miracles he's doing, we read in verse 5, even his own brothers did not believe in him. You know, however well you teach, however well you live, and even if you were to do miracles, you cannot make people believe in Jesus. And if you yourself would have been there in the home growing up, seeing Jesus doing all these things and living such a wonderful, gracious, loving life, that would not force you to believe in him. Of course, God may use the testimony of a good life and of good words. These things are important. Jesus tells us we're to let our light so shine before men that they may see our good works and glorify our Father in heaven. And yet there is a hardness in the human heart that even the life, the words, and the miracles of Jesus did not soften. As Jesus says, chapter 6, verse 44, no one can come to me unless the Father who sent me draws them. You know, just as an aside, I know that for some of you, the thing that you want most of all for your loved ones is that they come to believe in Jesus. You want many things for the ones you love. But this one thing far exceeds all your other desires for those you love, just as eternity far exceeds time. And you know, Jesus has experienced the pain when we feel, pain that we feel when people we love just don't understand us. It was bad enough that the Jewish leaders wanted to kill Jesus, but for his own brothers not to believe in him, he hears the prayers that we offer for him. He sees the tears that we shed. He knows the efforts that we make to reach people with the gospel. I wonder, do you have a tendency to blame yourself when loved ones don't believe? Jesus doesn't blame you. He sympathizes. He's been in the place where you are. Not even his brothers believed in him. You see, only the Father can enable someone to believe. Only the Father. Unless the Father draws someone to me, they will not come, says Jesus. That's the first thing you need to know. It's the Father's work in your heart. The second thing you need to know is this. Only when you seek the glory of God will you be true. Only when you seek the glory of God are you true. You know, it's sometimes said, free advice is as cheap as it sounds. Sure, we've all had the experience. Someone comes up, you're not looking for any particular advice, and they start giving it to you. And it's particularly irksome of unrequested careers advice. However well-meaning, and of course, it's very well-meaning, but there's an implied criticism that you ought to be doing better for yourself. And so the careers advice comes in. Well, the Festival of Tabernacles was near. It was a time when the crowds would be flocking to Jerusalem, the ideal time in the eyes of Jesus' brothers for Jesus to go there and perform some miracles. After all, the religious people would all be there. This was the time for Jesus to get himself well known. And so they offer him a piece of careers advice. Verses 3 and 4. Jesus' brothers said to him, leave Galilee and go to Judea, so that your disciples there may see the works you do. No one who wants to become a public figure acts in secret. Since you are doing these things, show yourself to the world. I wonder what their motives were for telling Jesus to do this. Were they sorry for him that so many of his disciples had left him in Galilee? In chapter 6, Verse 66, we read, from this time many of his disciples turned back and no longer followed him. Maybe, but I think it's more likely that they rather wanted to have a famous, powerful brother. After all, look at what Jesus says in verse 18. Whoever speaks on their own does so to gain personal glory. But he who seeks the glory of the one who sent him is a man of truth. There is nothing false about him. Or it would mean a great deal to these brothers if Jesus was popular again. If Jesus had lots of followers and they are his brothers. And especially if Jesus were to become king. Wow, think of the posts they could have in the kingdom. Go to Jerusalem. Go and show yourself. You see, it was an attempt to impose their agenda on Jesus. Jesus should do what they wanted him to do. Let's see how Jesus responds, verse 6. Therefore Jesus told them, my time is not yet here. For you, any time will do. The world cannot hate you, but it hates me because I testify that its works are evil. You go to the festival. I'm not going up to this festival because my time has not yet fully come. You see, Jesus has a clear sense of God's time for him. Not so Jesus' brothers. And interestingly, Jesus says, you know, they can go whenever they want. As if Jesus is saying to them, look, the timing in your lives is of relative insignificance as far as God is concerned. It's quite an indictment, really. You know, my time has not yet come. You can go whenever you like. How you lead your life is relatively insignificant. You see, Jesus is not going to be dragged into a meaningless pursuit of personal glory. Verse 18 again. Whoever speaks on their own does so for personal glory. But he who seeks the glory of the one who sent him is a man of truth. There is nothing false about him. Jesus would not tone down his message. He wouldn't stop speaking and just do miracles. Do you notice that's all that they want Jesus to do? They don't want Jesus to go to Jerusalem to teach the people. Verse 3 again. Leave Galilee and go to Judea so that your disciples there may see the works you do. Sure, Jesus could have gained all the disciples he wanted to if he just did nice miracles healing people. But he has to say to them, the world cannot hate you, verse 7, but it hates me because I testify that its works are evil. He didn't just do miracles. He spoke as well, and he spoke in a way that aggravated people sometimes because he testified that their works were evil. But he's not going to tone down his message. Jesus accepted that he was going to be hated by many. Because people do not like their faults being exposed. Jesus is going to wait God's time. And then he would go openly to Jerusalem. And when he went openly to Jerusalem at first, they would praise him. They would cut down palm branches and wave them and shout, Hosanna, it's he who comes in the name of the Lord. But a week later, they'd crucify him. You see, God's time for him to go to Jerusalem would be to his death. Jesus wasn't about seeking personal glory. He was about doing the will of God, and that would lead him to the cross. This time he did go to the festival, but he didn't go openly. He didn't go the way they wanted him to go. He went secretly, verse 10, not the way the brothers said. The counsel they gave him was unbelieving counsel. An unbelieving counsel tries to avoid suffering. It tries to avoid the way to the cross. It panders to our desire for praise and for acceptance. And it even does this. It tries to make Jesus fit into our agenda of exalting ourselves. That's what the brothers are doing here. You go to Jerusalem. You do miracles there. And it will benefit us. And sadly, you get plenty of people today for whom this is the case also. If serving Jesus will give me honour in the eyes of other people, then I want to serve Jesus. If Jesus will make me wealthy or successful in my relationships, then I'll follow him. Jesus will serve my agenda. Great. You see, what we see in Jesus' brothers is the root from which unbelief grows. And that root is pride. I want to exalt myself. I want people to think well of me. And when such thoughts dominate our hearts, there is no space for faith. The root of unbelief is pride. Faith says, Lord God, you alone are worthy of honour. I am unworthy. I need your grace. Pride says, I'll find my own way. I don't need God's grace. I'll exalt myself. Pride is not concerned about being true. It simply craves human approval. Now, that's the great motive in so many people's lives. And by nature, it's the motive of all of our hearts. We crave the approval of others. That's what the brothers of Jesus wanted. They wanted somehow to be exalted. They wanted Jesus to feed their agenda. Only when you seek the glory of God are you true. Is that in your heart? Is that why you don't really believe? Because pride dominates your heart. You crave the approval of other people. Verse 18, whoever speaks on their own does so to gain personal glory. But he who seeks the glory of the one who sent him is a man of truth. There is nothing false about him. You know, the brothers did come to believe. In Acts 1, verse 14, we read that they're there in the upper room with 120. Their hearts did change. And one of them, James, is probably the one who wrote what we have is the book of James in the New Testament. He wrote this in James 3, verse 13. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. But if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come down from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. Was James speaking from his own experience? Was James thinking of this time when he and the other brothers told Jesus to go to Jerusalem? Thank God he changed. Thank God we too can be changed. Only when you seek the glory of God are you true. The third thing you need to know, if you're going to avoid this kind of unbelief that we see here in John 7, is this. Only when you submit to God can you see Jesus rightly. Only when you submit to God can you see Jesus rightly. The festival, there in Jerusalem, there was widespread discussion and debate about Jesus. So verse 12, among the crowds, There was widespread whispering about him. Some said, he is a good man. Others replied, no, he deceives the people. Then when Jesus started to teach, the Jews in the temple courts are amazed at his teaching. They say in verse 15, how did this man get such learning without having been taught? You see, they were used to the sort of teaching by the rabbis who would forever back up all the things that they said by what other rabbis had said. Jesus didn't look to the writings of the rabbis to back up what he said, and yet people could see that he taught and preached with great wisdom and great authority. Even his enemies, who later were sent to arrest him, have to say this as they report back. If we read ahead into verse 46, they come back to the Pharisees, who say, why didn't you bring him in? And they reply, no one ever spoke the way this man does. The people were amazed at Jesus' words, the authority, the wisdom. Jesus tells the people what it was. It was so different about his teaching. It was simply this: it came from God. But they would only know this for sure if they have a right attitude towards God. Verse 17. Or verse 16. Jesus answered, my teaching is not my own. It comes from the one who sent me. They're amazed. Where does he get this teaching? He says, it's from the one who sent me. Then verse 17. Anyone who chooses to do the will of God will find out whether my teaching comes from God or whether I speak on my own. It's those who do the will of God who are going to see that my teaching is from God. Spiritual insight does not depend on your intelligence or your education. It is a moral thing. Your natural abilities do not qualify you to make a true assessment of Jesus. What a shocking thing that Jesus says. It cuts against what we're taught at university, doesn't it? That our minds are supreme. If we can think it out, we can work it out. Jesus says no. It's those who choose to do the will of God who find out whether his teaching comes from God. This cuts right against our Western culture. It's a moral thing. Spiritual insight is a moral thing. You see, Jesus goes on to expose the fallacy of their human judgment. So, they claim to follow Moses' law. And yet, they were trying to kill Jesus. I mean, that was one of the basic, obvious laws. You don't need to know about Moses to know that murder is wrong. They claim to follow Moses, and yet Jesus tells them in verse 19, has not Moses given you the law? Yet not one of you keeps the law. Why are you trying to kill me? Well, why were they trying to kill Jesus? Well, because in their judgment, he had broken the Sabbath. Back in chapter 5, healed that paralyzed man at the pool of Bethesda in Jerusalem. He did so on the Sabbath. And when they found out that it was Jesus, they start to persecute him. And they plot to kill him. And yet, says Jesus, in order to keep the law of Moses, what do you do on the Sabbath? Well, you circumcise your infant boys. The law of Moses said that on the eighth day, that little baby had to be circumcised. And if that eighth day falls on the Sabbath, you go ahead and circumcise him. Verse 23. Now, if a boy can be circumcised on the Sabbath, so that the law of Moses may not be broken, why are you angry with me for healing a man's whole body on the Sabbath? I mean, do you get the irony here? Their judgment allowed them to cut part of the body on the Sabbath, but not heal the whole body. And Jesus is just showing that the fallacy of their way of thinking. You see, their judgment, their human judgment, was straitjacketed by their own laws, by their rabbis, and it was warped by their prejudice against Jesus. So they want to kill him. You see, this is why a human assessment of Jesus is flawed. It is not neutral. But, says Jesus, the one who chooses to do the will of God, they will know that Jesus speaks from God. Verse 17. And you see, we have exactly the same thing what you have in the brothers. The root of the problem, their unbelief, is pride. Oh, it shows itself in a very different way. The brothers want Jesus to do more miracles. The crowds in Jerusalem don't want them to do these miracles, particularly if they're on the Sabbath. But at the root, there is pride. That's what's behind unbelief. They stick adamantly to their particular interpretation of Moses, even though it is blatantly inconsistent. They think that they know and that their lives are right, and no one is going to contradict them. They are good, and Jesus is what? Look at it, shocking, verse 20, demon-possessed. That's their assessment of Jesus. They won't see, they can't see, because they won't submit to God. Now we've seen here two manifestations of unbelief. They both look very different. But at root, pride gives them both. Now look at your own heart. Look inside you. Is there a willingness in your heart that Jesus should be exalted? Or are you just looking for glory for yourself? Is that craving that you are born with for human recognition and praise, is that what's driving your life? Because as long as it is, you'll have no space for faith in Jesus. Are you submitting to God? Are you willing to say, God, you are right and I am wrong? I can't put it more simply than that. You say in your heart, God, you are right. I am wrong. God, be merciful to me, a sinner. Because when you say that, you've kicked pride out. Then you can believe. Then you can submit to God, and then you can see. Anyone who chooses to do the will of God will find out whether my teaching comes from God or whether I speak on my own. Is there unbelief in your heart? Is there this kind of unbelief there? Let me urge you today, boot it out. Deal with that pride. Submit to God's will. Seek his glory, not your own glory. Let's pause for a moment before I pray.